Good morning, everyone. It's Thursday morning, and we are going early now. Welcome to the Fantasy Football Today podcast. Adam Azer with Dave Richard and Jamie Eisenberg. And we're swapping with baseball most days for the rest of the baseball season. We're going to be doing the early morning shows, get these podcasts out a little bit earlier. Have I said the word early enough?
I can't believe you woke us up at 5:30 in the morning for this.
Not quite. It's about 9:30 in the morning right now. So here's what's coming up on today's show. Offensive lines are very important. I'm going to ask you guys about the best and worst offensive lines in fantasy, how that might impact some players out there. Who has a lot to gain or lose in preseason week 3? And a lot of tweets at Adam Azer, A-I-Z-E-R, at Dave Richard, singular Richard, at Jamie Eisenberg, J-A-M-E-Y. No Heath today, but at Heath Cummings Sr., S-R, at Heath Cummings Sr., and emails at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. Hey, guys, how's your fantasy baseball team doing, by the way?
It's going great. Jamie and I share a team with our friend Jim, who works in San Francisco. Hi, Jim. I know you're listening. And we are very deep in the playoff hunt. We think we're going to get a playoff spot this week. We made some big trades at the deadline, and we haven't lost since. I owe much of this success to my colleague, Jamie. He's done a great job running the team.
Stupid Carlos Carrasco.
Oh, that's
I don't even know. I don't even know half of our players. but I know what our record is, and we're doing great.
Jamie and I share a team as well. So that,
how's that team going?
Well, it's going to be one of those frustrating teams that dominates the league all year. Most points, first place
for
most of the season. And we're going to lose in the first round. But what I was going to say, thanks, Dave. What I was going to say is, maybe the three of us should share a football team. What do you think?
No chance.
Why?
It's frustrating enough with baseball, but at least baseball, I can say, I can lean on my colleagues. Football, I don't want to lean on anybody.
Fine. I had a feeling that would be the case. Alright, let's get into football then. You don't have to lean on anyone. Here are some questions. Some things that are keeping me up at night.
Oh God.
Are you guys too low on LeSean McCoy? In my mind, it seems like since the hamstring injury, it's been like you guys want nothing to do with LeSean McCoy. And I don't know if that's justified. Discuss.
I still want LeSean McCoy. I just don't want him in the second round.
Yeah, I would take him in round 7, no problem.
Wait.
Where LeSean McCoy is falling, which is the early part, end of round 2, beginning of round 3, I'm perfectly fine with in that range. But if I draft anywhere past the first 4 picks, it's very doubtful I'm going to take LeSean McCoy.
I will like LeSean McCoy more if Tyrod Taylor becomes the starting quarterback of the Buffalo Bills. I'm hoping that's what happens. We've seen it so many times where these running quarterbacks get under center and the running backs put up good numbers. And I would like to see that happen. I would like to see that opportunity for LeSean McCoy. The injury bothers me. The track record of how that offense works and how LeSean might not catch a lot of passes, that bothers me. And I'm still hung up on Chip Kelly trading him. I really am. I think that Chip Kelly trading LeSean McCoy is a telling thing.
Again, I'd have to disagree with that. I think the sense that I get is that was more of a personality thing, not an ability
thing. It was 100% a personality thing. It was also an on-field thing because he didn't want to pay LeSean McCoy. He wanted to get somebody who he feels fits his system
sure, a
little bit better. And look, he likes Kiko Alonso. He got an opportunity to get one of his guys, a guy that's going to help his defense, and it was a fit for both teams.
Okay, so but with McCoy, Jamie, you're talking about him end of round 2. Before the injury, where would you have taken him? Wasn't he a round 1, maybe early round 2 guy?
He was in that discussion. The way I continue to evaluate it more so is I look at the receivers and what their value is and the safety factor of it, and a lot of it has to do with just what you're getting in that 3-4 range at running back. And so I almost feel it's in a better interest to lock up 2 receivers once you get past the first 4 or 5 guys and then just go running back crazy 3-4-5.
Maybe even more so, I don't know that we've talked about this, but without Jordy and without Kelvin Benjamin, your chances of getting a wide receiver that you really like in round 4 have decreased. So
exactly.
maybe that puts even more emphasis on the receiver thing in the first 2 rounds.
Especially if a lot of people in your draft go receiver.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, cool. Well, glad we got that off our chest. Question the second. Is Richard Rodgers, tight end for Green Bay, relevant?
I always like how you love players like this for one specific reason.
Touchdowns?
No.
Alliteration?
Exactly.
I'm Adam Azer after really all, so. Sorry, Dave, what?
I really can't believe this is what keeps you up at night.
No, it doesn't keep me up at night. The cat keeps me up at night, if you must know. But is Richard Rodgers relevant? They need people to catch touchdowns there. They want a big red zone threat. Is he going to improve this year?
Do you think he'll be as good as JerMichael Finley was in his best year?
Oh, no. I don't think the yards will, but the touchdowns, could he be Dwayne Allen?
I don't think he can. I'm going to say no.
I'd be surprised if he is, but I would also not be surprised if, come the middle of the season, we're talking about him coming off of a one or two touchdown game, and you look at him as a streaming option.
Okay. Can Drew Brees and Mark Ingram both have huge seasons? I ask this because I think there's a correlation. Like, I don't know that both of them could score a lot of touchdowns. Brees' touchdowns were down last year, and the Saints' rushing touchdowns were up from what we had seen the previous two seasons, 2012 and 2013. However, in 2011, when the Saints scored over 34 points a game, which is kind of crazy, Drew Brees had like 40-something touchdowns, and the Saints had the seventh most rushing touchdowns in the NFL. But can they both, Brees and Ingram, have big seasons, or it will be one of the other?
Last year, Ingram finished 14th among running backs, and Brees finished 5th. Are you looking for more than that?
Well, I think that Brees was a little disappointing, and it was because of the touchdowns. It was a disappointing 5th, wouldn't you say? And that's why people are a little down on him this year.
Maybe. Maybe. I mean, he was only 4 points better than Russell Wilson, who finished 6th. So, but then again, he was only 3 points worse than Roethlisberger, who finished 4th. So, to me, it's all relative. Yes, I would say that Brees was a little disappointing last year, but he still was a very, you call him a top 10 quarterback if you want. It wouldn't surprise me if they ended up that way again this year, where Brees top 5, Ingram top 15.
The reason Brees was disappointing last year is because where he was drafted.
Right.
So everybody drafted him in the first or second round thinking he was going to be the same guy over the last couple of seasons, and that's where the letdown came in. So I think if you're getting them at the relative value where you probably have to get them, which in some cases could be the same round. You know, you could be looking at round 3 guys for both of them. Round 4 guys potentially for both of them, depending on the size of your league.
But as disappointing as Brees was last year because of where you took him, Mark Ingram was sensational because of where you ended up taking him
last
year.
Without a doubt.
And his price tag has obviously gone up.
I think the way that I approach those two guys is I'll settle for Brees, but I target Ingram. And Ingram's stock is only rising with CJ Spiller's absence because they are using him to catch passes. And he said he wants to be a 3-down back. And if he can get to somewhere close to 40 catches on top of what he should be able to do running the ball, he's going to have a monster year.
Are you worried, though, that you're falling into a trap because Spiller is expected to be back for week 1?
No, I've actually moved Ingram down a spot or two just because I think there's a little bit more upside with Gore and Lamar Miller.
Okay.
But I still think that Mark Ingram should have a wonderful season. And it's like when I look at those three guys, and I'll factor Justin Forsett in as well, those four guys, if I can get two of them with two stud receivers, man, am I happy.
Next question. Other than Niall Davis, which handcuffs have the most upside?
Can I amend something that I always say about Niall Davis, where I call him the best lottery ticket in football?
Yeah.
He's now the second best lottery ticket in football.
Ooh.
Okay, wait. Let's think here. Falcons' third receiver.
That'd be your best lottery ticket, yes.
Who?
You'll never win Powerball.
Who are we talking about? Ronnie Hillman.
No, but that's a good one, though. It's, the guy that he's playing behind is somebody that I will not draft this year.
Oh, Ryan Matthews.
Ryan Matthews is the best lottery ticket in fantasy football this year.
But he's an expensive lottery ticket compared to a lot of the other ones.
It's not that difference between Matthews and Davis.
Well, I've seen Matthews go around 7.
That's early. Okay. I've seen Matthews fall to around 10.
Wow.
So
can I get in that league?
It's the people that are all in on DeMarco Murray. And so I will gladly take Ryan Matthews as a third, fourth running back, depending on where I have to get him, knowing who I could still get potentially after him. If I love the two guys that I have, I love stashing Ryan Matthews.
Mm-hmm.
And I really just think that he's going to have a 3-4, potentially more game stretch of being a starter for Chip Kelly.
Dave, any other handcuffs that you're particularly interested in, late round guys?
Matt Jones in Washington, just because of what we've talked about already this week. He can do what Alfred Morris can do, and he's a good receiver out of the backfield. There's a few things I don't like about him, but it's not worth worrying about. Where you're getting him in a draft is really a positive. Andre Williams in New York, Ronnie Hillman in Denver, Kyrie Robinson in New Orleans. We know that Mark Ingram isn't a lock to play 16 games this year, and we know that C.J. Spiller isn't a lock to play 16 games this year. So why not spend that pick on Robinson, who's a good pass catcher out of the backfield as well? I think that that's enough.
Are all
Aaron
of the
Harris Payne should be on the list?
He's on the list. As I'm looking at my rankings,
David
now,
Johnson should be on the list.
Well, let me.
To me, he's ahead of those guys.
How about the like? How about you know, Jerick McKinnon, James Starks? Are all of the
without
first...
a doubt those two guys are superstars? If the guys in front of them go down,
and what about what's your take on the Seattle situation?
Turbin,
all the way.
And you think he'll be good if he gets that role and like definitely?
I think that they would still split carries like we've said the last couple of years, but he would be the lead guy.
I think the split would be like 65-35 in Turbin's favor, whereas before we might have said 50-50.
The one thing will be is though how much are they going to use Turbin as a fullback because they've done that in the past.
Well, they wouldn't do that if Marshawn.
No, but my point would be is that do they want to change things around dramatically, or do they put both guys on the field in the backfield?
They could do that too. But if Marshawn's gone, I think Turbin's a lock for 12 to 15 touches a game.
Now, is Matt Forte worth handcuffing, and who would you handcuff him with?
It's still a shared situation right now. Jeremy Langford definitely helped his stock with his second preseason performance, but they still like Jacquizz Rodgers.
He can pass protect.
And the only running back that I would take in the first round that I wouldn't handcuff would be Jeremy Hill. That's kind of a weird situation because, like, Gio is a very expensive handcuff. He'll go before Ryan Matthews, right?
Not necessarily.
His average.
His ADP is?
Yeah.
I would rather have Matthews.
I feel like he'll go in a similar range in our drafts at this point. But, yeah, I don't know. Like, what would happen if Jeremy Hill got hurt? I don't know that Gio goes back to being what they wanted him to be at the beginning of last year.
I think Gio would go back to that role, and there's a running back they like there named Rex Burkhead.
Yeah.
And they love his hands. They love using him as a receiver. And he might actually get some playing time as a receiver.
Okay.
I think he's banged up right now, so I'd have to check that to see if he's okay and if he's practicing. But if everybody's healthy in Cincinnati's backfield, I think you'd see him in some situations that you'd see Gio in with Hill healthy.
Last question. Question four was like an 8-part question, so thank you. If you draft today, how many games are you expecting Tom Brady to miss?
4.
I guess 4.
Okay,
I don't
that
like
stinks.
It, but that's what I think.
Tweet of the day number 1 is from Alex Martin. It's called Delaware because the captain's last name of one of the first ships to sail to the colonies was De La War, pronounced Delaware. But I don't know if that's true, because I looked it up on Wikipedia, and apparently there was this guy, an English-American politician. Maybe he sailed there. Well, I'm sure he sailed there. Maybe he was one of the first. His name was Thomas West, 3rd and 12th Baron De La Ware, or De La War, as it's spelled. And now we know the origin. Tweet of the day number 2 is from Jim. Which running back has the best schedule? Dave, do you have any insight on this? You're the schedule
I like
guy.
The schedule in the NFC South. Just in general. I think that those teams have very favorable schedules. It's part of the reason why I like Matt Ryan as much as I do. So
right.
I think that plays into Ingram. Would he be the best running back in the NFC South? Probably.
Yeah.
So I guess Ingram would be the one.
Jay Stu.
Yeah. You got to play it in order to take advantage of the schedule.
He's healthy, isn't he?
He is right now. Is he going to be healthy in week 6?
Is he really a lot more injury prone than Mark Ingram?
Yeah, I'm going to say yeah.
All right. Let's talk best and worst offensive lines. We know
now,
the Cowboys.
His ceiling is lower than Mark Ingram's.
Yeah, I would obviously take Ingram ahead. But the Cowboys have the best offensive lines. Who are some other units that could be really good for fantasy this year?
Baltimore.
If they're healthy. They had some injuries last week.
Baltimore should be good. New Orleans should be much better.
Yep. I think they kind of, they stole a big piece from Seattle. Max Unger at center. And then they added somebody, I think. I can't remember. I'd have to check real quick to see who it is. But that should be a much improved offensive line.
is New Orleans. They drafted Andrews Peet, but apparently he's not having a very
good game. Yeah, he's not doing so well. Who do they add? Why am I blanking? I know they lost Grubbs to Kansas City. Yeah, maybe I'm mistaken on that. Unger is obviously the big reason why we like their offensive line better. And they definitely improved. I think Arizona improved their offensive line. I think Denver's addition of Evan Mathis should help them a lot.
Yeah, they needed that.
They really did. They need, that's a shot in the arm for them.
Bengals have one of the best offensive lines.
They do. And it's deep. Cincinnati, almost all the way around, is very deep. Cleveland has a good offensive line. They added Cameron Irving. He'll eventually develop into a good starter for them.
San Diego did well to add Orlando Franklin as a guard.
All right.
Offensive line's still going to be good even without Mathis, but that takes a hit to them.
Well, the Baltimore one that you guys brought up is, you know, people worry about Justin Forsett, but that's going to be a big help for him.
Especially if they can't throw the ball without any receivers. So that's one to keep an eye
between
on.
Between that line and their fullback, who will probably play a lot because they don't have the receivers to put on the field. Yeah, it's going to be good for Forsett. For
Detroit
sure.
did much better this offseason with the additions they made.
They traded a guy to New England who I saw at the Senior Bowl a couple of years back, and they moved him to tight end on his first day there.
Did we mention Cleveland?
Yes, we mentioned Cleveland. Left side of its offensive line. Okay. Great.
Yep.
And they should be pretty good at
the right
center,
side
too.
Isn't so bad either.
No.
How about offensive lines that concern you? I'll bring up Denver again. I mean, we mentioned Evan Mathis being a good addition for them, but if people have one argument against C.J. Anderson, it's usually that offensive line is going to be bad.
But if Evan Mathis delivers on what they want, then I think those concerns go away.
I hope so. That's really big. Are you concerned enough to avoid C.J. Anderson? I think the answer is no, but I'll ask it anyway. Okay, glad I asked. Any other bad offensive lines that could hurt fantasy owners?
San Francisco goes from a great offensive line to I don't know offensive
line. Right, you know, we thought that they would be bad, but they looked pretty darn good against Dallas as far as run blocking goes. Pass blocking, I don't know if they're quite there yet, but the run blocking was good last week. And you look at what they've got. They still have Staley at left tackle. He's great. Boone at left guard is fine. It's the right side of that line where there's some questions.
Where are you guys on Carlos Hyde right now? How are you feeling about him?
More encouraged after the second preseason game.
I think he's a safer number two running back than he was 2 weeks ago.
The three guys that I look at that I don't want to say I'm unsure about, but it's kind of like you settle for as opposed to you target, would be Latavius Murray, Carlos Hyde, and Alfred Morris, because they're all two down backs, at least coming into the season. They're not going to be used in a lot of passing down situations, presumably. But Hyde is very talented. Murray is very talented. If their offensive lines hold up, they could be very good. Morris is just a concern because the team around him.
I think we should talk about Oakland's offensive line because I think they've got some pretty good pieces. It's still not a perfect unit, but Penn at left tackle is serviceable. Gabe Jackson at guard is good. Rodney Hudson they got from Kansas City, he's good. I don't like Jamarcus Webb and Menel on the right side of the line, but if they hold up, if they're serviceable, that's a nice offensive line for Murray. And by the way, I think Murray, of the three running backs you mentioned, Jamie, I think he's got the most potential to break out into being a three down back for his team. I don't think Alf has a chance.
Without a doubt.
And I think Hyde can really only do it if guys get hurt.
Yes, I couldn't agree more.
So actually, you know, I'm glad you mentioned Latavius Murray. I am trying not to get too excited about him and Drew Brees, really, but those were two guys that I came away from preseason week two. Just very happy that they were able to produce. Brees looked great. Murray scored. You know, like, Murray to me, I don't even hesitate to take him over Alfred Morris and Carlos Hyde. And I'm getting more excited about Latavius Murray.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I just look at what Morris and that offense just looks so bad. And Murray, you know what? He's got an opportunity, as we saw last year, you know, to put up good numbers, if not great numbers. And he just feels like he's trending in the right direction, where Morris feels like he's trending in the wrong one.
Now, not to disagree, because obviously I agree with everything you said, but just to bring up the other side of the coin here, the Redskins offense was pretty bad last year, and Alfred Morris still was the number 12 running back in standard scoring. I think he was number 18 in PPR. So could you see a similar situation unfolding where he still ends up producing?
Yes.
Yeah, sure. Morris to me is safe.
Yeah, I don't like safe.
Right.
take you safe and get out of here.
I think it's good to have a combination of safe and risk when you do your fantasy draft.
Yeah, I agree with that.
It really just comes down to who you can get and where you can get them and, you know, balancing the two. I don't want a team that's nothing but, you know, upside and potential. And I don't want a team full of, you know, safe Shirleys.
Yeah, the Boldens of the world. We don't want too many of them. All right. FanDuel, also, you have to balance safe and upside. If you're playing in tournaments, maybe you want to aim more upside. If you're playing in 50-50s or cash games where, you know, half the field typically wins money, maybe you want to play it safer. Personally, I think I use the same lineup no matter what, but there's some disagreement about that. But anyway, with preseason football in full swing and, you know, approaching its end, it's time to start thinking about your week one lineup in FanDuel.com, which is the leader in one-week fantasy football. More winners, more payouts than any other site. Here's something I think we're all interested in. FanDuel's paying out over $75 million a week this football season. And I think you know, and I know that you want some of that money. No season-long commitment, no sign-up fees. You can pick any players you want and play any time you want, as many times as you want. If you're worried about cost, entry fees start at just $1. And look, we're completely hooked on FanDuel. Last year, when we would get together on Sundays, we'd be working in the office, watching all the games. The leagues that we were talking about the most were our FanDuel teams, not our seasonal leagues. Still love seasonal, but FanDuel is just awesome and really fun on Sundays. So get hooked with us. Special offer for you now. Go to FanDuel.com, click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, and use our code CBSPOD. CBSPOD. First of all, for every dollar you deposit, FanDuel's going to match it with up to $200 that gets earned as you play. And right now, we got this early bird special. FanDuel's going to give you free entry into the Week 1 Million Dollar Rush Contest with any deposit you make. A free shot at $100,000 cash for opening week. The best offer FanDuel is going to have all season. It ends September 4th. There are limited spots in the contest, so use that offer code CBSPOD and get on there, register today. And when you're sitting there and you got your FanDuel lineup set and you're ready to watch Pizza Dave, or you're ready to watch football, Dave, I know what I go. I get myself a pie at Cheapy's Pizza. I sit down and watch football all day.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Tell me more about it.
$5 worth. I'm not doing a whole read on Cheapy's
Pizza.
Come on,
do the read, do the read.
Oh, fresh natural ingredients from overseas factories. Now with 30% less listeria in our green peppers.
That's right.
Follow at Cheapy's Pizza. Oh, this is really taking on, I don't know, not a mind of its own.
I think you did a better job with the FanDuel read than you did the Cheapy's Pizza.
I would say so.
I just have to say.
I just wonder if there is such a thing as Cheapy's Pizza somewhere.
Well, apparently they're on Twitter.
Yeah, well, that was after last
week's podcast.
Their logo
has a cat.
Their logo has a what?
A cat in it.
It does?
Yes.
At Cheapy's Pizza, follow it. Less listeria, which is always a good thing. Players with a lot on the line in preseason week 3. We talked about Melvin Gordon yesterday. Well, who else? Who else has a lot to prove, gain or lose, this week? Really? Hi. All those guys.
To me, Gordon is practically the headliner because he's one of those running backs that could swing into being, all right, I can definitely trust him as a number two fantasy running back to, I guess I'll settle for him to, I don't want him, but he's falling to a point in a draft where I feel like I have to take him. He could fit into any one of those three buckets and a lot's going to swing on exactly what we see from him and whether he runs with caution or whether he runs, you know, straight ahead and gets physical and down and dirty for the Chargers.
Okay, so if you are drafting tonight, let's say, we'll have more to talk about with Ingram on Monday. But if you're drafting tonight, he's after, did I say Ingram?
Yes.
I meant Gordon. There is Ingram, of course, but Melvin Gordon. But he's after Ingram, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What about Latavius Murray? Gordon or Murray? Hey.
Ingram over Gordon? You there?
No, not yet.
Oh, you're still taking Gordon over Mark Ingram?
Give me one more week.
How about Latavius Murray, Jamie, or Melvin Gordon?
If we see a similar performance from Murray this week and Gordon struggles again,
right,
yeah, then I'll make that switch for sure. And Stewart as well.
That's what I'm saying. Gordon is really like one of those running backs that could swing in a big way based on this game.
You still got to think, though, that I mean, Brandon Oliver really wasn't that good last year, except for like two games, that they want, they're going to want Melvin Gordon to be that guy for them.
Well, of course, they moved up in the NFL draft to take him.
Yeah.
Well, what you want and what you get are two totally different things. And I think Gordon, let's just say he has a bad game. Where do you re-rank him if he just doesn't show you anything? I mean, he could fall potentially to a low-end number two fantasy running back. He would be in the Jonathan, for me, because I'm not as big on Jonathan Stewart as Jamie, he could fall into the Jonathan Stewart, Chris Ivory, Todd Gurley group of running backs.
If he's a bust as an NFL player, I will put almost no stock into college stats. Because I went back and looked over the last 4 years or so, guys who averaged over 7 yards per carry, with a lot of carries, few and far between, and the four that I can remember off the top of my head were Melvin Gordon, Carlos Hyde, Lake Seastrunk, and LaMichael James.
Ooh.
Yeah, well, and he's different.
In a couple of those cases, scheme played a big role.
Well, that's the thing. Scheme plays a big role in all of those cases.
Yeah, it's true.
So it would mean almost nothing to me. But, you know, I think the argument I was making for Gordon was that he was so much better than even James White and Monte Ball, who both had very good college careers. But he was so much better than them at Wisconsin. But if he's a bust.
You're talking specifically at Wisconsin.
At Wisconsin. If he's a bust, it would really make me reevaluate any college numbers because system just plays such a big role. Who else, guys?
I have another one. Another rookie, in fact. What have we seen from TJ Yeldon this preseason?
Street clothes?
Yeah. Well, he's going to play
but
on Friday against the Lions.
TJ Yeldon hasn't done anything. Duke Johnson hasn't done anything. Yeah. Kevin Coleman hasn't done anything.
We gotta get to each one by one.
I mean, they're all the same category. It's do something. David Johnson did something. So, looks like he's back to being a guy that we can count on wherever you have to draft him. Those other rookie running backs, do something. Prove your worth.
Well, does that teach you a lesson that we shouldn't get too down on these guys, that eventually they will do something, and maybe you have to wait, but let's not let their draft stock fall too far. I feel like
Coleman is falling. And I think rightfully so, just because he, even before he got hurt, wasn't separating himself.
Oh, he's another guy, by the way, with amazing college stats.
Yep, and a Big Ten running back.
Yeah. All right, so yeah, how do you feel about Yeldon right now going into the week?
I think he's still a good number two guy to consider. And he's in that, you know, round 4, 5, 6 range, you know, depending on where he falls.
And how do you feel about Duke Johnson right now?
Great value.
Let's talk about the Cleveland running backs. I think that's a situation worth monitoring.
Yeah, I can't wait to see how they shake him out in the preseason game against Tampa Bay. Now that they've got Duke Johnson, now that he's healthy, they want to see what he can do. I don't know how much work he'll end up getting, and I think he'll get sprinkled in with the starters. I would be surprised if he started the game for the Browns.
Would you, with how they operate? I mean,
yeah, I don't think they're going to throw him in as the starter right away. Although, if they do and he plays well, then that'll tell you something.
Sure.
Not that Tampa Bay's run defense has been okay this preseason. They did a nice job against Jeremy Hill. They got Jeremy Hill to fumble.
It was the daytime Jeremy Hill would have had four.
Yeah, of course. He'd be number one in all the preseason rankings. Yeah, Duke's got a lot. If Duke doesn't have a bad game, I don't think his rank changes. I think people are still going to say, well, he's probably still the best Browns running back, even though he didn't have a good game. But they're not going to clamor for him. Whereas if he does have a good game, he'll probably move up to where, like, I've got him ranked, which is as a, you know, number 4 fantasy running back, potentially a number 3 with all sorts of upside.
I think one of the mistakes I've been making is, in drafts, not taking chances on the Duke Johnsons of the world, like high upside guys. I've been waiting and taking Andre Williams in some drafts. I feel good about that. But I don't have Duke Johnson on any of my 3 teams right now. I don't have Amir Abdullah. And it's tough. You know, I like to have 3 running backs, or 2 or 3 running backs with my first 4 picks, and none of them are going to be Abdullah or Gurley or Johnson at that point. But I don't know. Maybe I'm ignoring some mid-round upside. You know, like,
well, you don't have to get Duke Johnson with mid-round upside.
Yeah, mid
maybe
to late.
Maybe that changes after this weekend.
He would have to have a monster game. For
yeah, he's.
Happen.
I mean, he's fallen so far in drafts that it's worth the shot on him. I mean, you know, Dave rightfully so has been very high on Duke Johnson, and to a certain extent, you know, maybe the same way I was with Abdullah, you know, was overdrafting him based on the early mocks. Now you're getting him in a spot where it's just like, oh my gosh, why not? Because if I have to cut him for, let's just say it's Terrence West, you can make that move. I mean, you know, I'm just throwing a name out there, but for Dan Heron or, you know, another handcuff that you may be looking at, Jerick McKinnon goes undrafted in a lot of leagues, you know, so it's almost worth it that once you get your, you know, the guys that you're talking about, Adam, maybe not the names, but the way you like to draft. So let's say you get three running backs in your first four picks. And then you just start dealing with receiver and quarterback and tight end. And your fourth guy is Duke Johnson or somebody of that ilk? Perfect.
Right. Yeah. But definitely want to focus on high upside guys with those mid to late round picks.
And I think
like
the reason
roster.
Duke is definitely relevant. It's not so much his opportunity as much as his opportunity with, going back to our earlier conversation, his offensive line. He doesn't have that offensive line. If he's, let's say, playing in I'm trying to think of, you know, mediocre situation, offensive line situation.
Philadelphia. No, bad example.
Huh?
I said Philadelphia, but that's a terrible example.
No, I'm just trying to think, you know.
Denver?
Yeah, but he wouldn't get the opportunity in Denver. You know, I'm just, Atlanta. If he's in Atlanta, you know, it's not the same potential.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I still have durability concerns with him. I mean, if you haven't listened to all of our podcasts, that was a big crux of the argument. He's kind of banged up all the time. But no, you're right. I mean, look, he's falling and falling, so good value for him. Couple things I want to see, again, the Denver offense and what they're going to look like. And Dave, the way you laid it out on Monday's show with Lamar Miller losing those goal line carries to Damian Williams, who, by the way, had a goal line fumble as well, it didn't seem as bad as the box score made it out to be. Like, Miller seemed to get his chances. And
yes.
Then they took him out of the game, and then Williams had a big game. But I don't want to see Williams steal a goal line carry from Lamar Miller in this game.
Right. Which would surprise me if it happened, because I don't think I look at Damian Williams and think big, burly, physical goal line running back. Do you, Jamie? Do you see him?
No, but I mean, Miller, for all extents and purposes, really isn't either. He's bigger than Williams, more physical than Williams.
Right.
Just as physical as Williams.
Right. Yeah, Miller's a small guy.
I'll be at that game, so we'll have plenty to talk about that. Dave's going to have Tampa Bay, Cleveland covered. I'll have Miami and Atlanta covered. So a lot of the question mark teams, or at least three of the four question mark teams, Miami doesn't really have a lot of questions. You're looking at, you know, some potential answers for a lot of fantasy owners.
We'll be on the Twitter.
Yeah. And you'll be on our radio show. I think you guys are scheduled to call in. Heath and I are going to be on Eye on Fantasy Football on CBS Sports Radio at 10 p.m. Eastern time till midnight.
So it sounds like a must listen.
Yeah, it's Saturday
night.
Fantasy
football.
I just want to remind people that a year ago, we were a little concerned about LeGarrette Blount stealing goal line carries from Le'Veon Bell.
Well, Le'Veon said that would happen.
Yeah.
And even after he said it, I thought, well, you know, that seems weird. And, I didn't buy it then. I thought it was just interesting that he went that direction. And it actually sent Bell's stock down.
Yes, it did.
In fantasy. And I got him in a bunch of leagues and I was thrilled.
Injuries news and notes. Odell Beckham Jr. says he knows he can get under players' skin. And I was wondering if you guys watched the Giants Jaguars game from Saturday. Dave, you watch all the games.
I watched the parts that mattered.
I'm really starting to get worried about Beckham getting hurt, because players are, I think, going to, if any wide receiver is going to get targeted, it's going to be him. He pisses everyone off. Victor Cruz and Beckham talked about it. They said the Jaguars safeties were targeting him. And it's partially his fault. And I really think it's something you have to consider when you draft him. I truly believe that with the amount of targets he's going to get, with the amount of deep balls he's going to get, like, I'm a little concerned about Beckham getting hurt.
Could he be, and I hope it's not, but could he be the biggest bust of the year?
Only if he gets injured.
Only if he gets injured after having some bad games first, though. I want to relay a story from Bengals camp. And I need to clean up the language in this story. There was a play. Odell Beckham was doing one-on-one drills against Dre Kirkpatrick, who's Cincinnati's best cornerback. And Dre is a pretty vocal guy. And after Dre ran a route with Odell, and Odell got away and made the catch. And very loudly, Dre Kirkpatrick said, "This fellow is as scared as elephant droppings."
Drake Kirkpatrick said that?
Yeah. So I wonder if people have been talking about him and saying that Odell is a little soft and he's not this tough guy. And we've seen it now with the Jacksonville game where the safeties are trying to beat him up and bang him up a little bit.
But that's every defense with every receiver.
Yeah. You don't hear them talking about that with Dez Bryant.
Yeah. But you know what though? Well, clearly Dez is a guy that likes to hit back.
I could name 10 receivers that they didn't say that.
I don't disagree with that, but every defense, I mean, we had this conversation, at least I did, with Chad Ochocinco. He knows guys are going to hit him
mm-hmm.
to try and, you know, maybe you don't take that extra step over the middle. Maybe you don't run that route the same way. They're going to try and knock you off your game as much as they possibly can. And so if he starts to get agitated by it and uncomfortable with it, well, that's going to spread throughout the league. And maybe we saw some of it last year you hit him a little bit more.
We did. There was a brawl in the Rams game. And it was like every game, people are getting mad at Odell Beckham. And I think, you know, he comes off as...
cocky.
Yeah.
Well, it's also all the hype. I mean, he's on every magazine cover you can see. You
he's know. On the he's on the fantasy football, CBSSports.com fantasy football magazine cover.
It's every game he plays. You know you're going to get a pregame highlight reel of him making one-handed ridiculous catches. And so guys take exception to that, especially defensive backs that get paid a ton of money and are good at what they do. They don't want to be the guy that has the one-handed catch made on them.
Well, I don't know that. It might just be one of those things where it's like, okay, yeah, but what are you going to do about it in fantasy? You know, it's not going to hurt his stock, really, this fear that we have, is it?
No, but I tell you what, though. I'm almost inclined to move E.J. Green ahead of him.
Is it worth our time to ask a cornerback that we talked to this weekend off the record about this and say, is this something that actually happens? And is this something you've heard about Odell Beckham?
Sure.
Yeah.
If you have the time and you run into one, you don't have to.
It's going to be somebody that played him.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, nobody's going to say that.
Atlanta played him, didn't they? Or was it before he actually broke out?
I don't know.
Yeah. All right, Jamie, let me ask you this. You said you'd consider AJ Green over Odell. When we talked about the Elite Eight wide receivers, this was when Jordy Nelson, I guess we just replaced Nelson with Cobb now, right?
No, it's Super 7 now.
Really? You don't put Cobb in that group?
Not yet.
All right. So either way, you said all of these guys have the chance to be the number one wide receiver.
And I still think Beckham does.
Yeah, I don't think AJ Green does.
I think he absolutely has a chance to.
Yep. The only hindrance to him, which is clearly a hindrance, is his quarterback.
That's the only reason why. I don't think he's a worse player. Maybe he drops more balls. I don't think he's a worse player than any of those guys, but I think his peak was what he did the previous 2 years before last year, which was number four.
I mean, it certainly is a negative if that's how you want to approach it. I still think, though, he's got more to give.
Okay. All right, then. I won't...
And I would put Randall Cobb in that group. I don't know if he's got a great shot to finish as the number one receiver, but he's going to get a few more targets now than he would have before with Jordy Nelson on the field.
More news
and
notes.
He can also do things running the ball.
Sorry. More news and notes.
He's done that though in a couple years.
They might start doing it now. They need to figure out some some new ways to play with Jordy out of there.
Actually, let's stay on this. You'd still take a guy like AJ Green, who's great. But you take him over Randall Cobb, who could, you know, just put up ridiculous numbers. You don't see Randall Cobb having an absolutely ridiculous season now?
I think it's possible. He had a career high in rush attempts last year.
He's said, well, he played more.
Right, and he's going to play more this year.
I just, you know, listening to what the Packers are saying, they're not going to change much, which I don't think they have to.
I'm saying Aaron Rodgers changes where he delivers the ball.
Right.
And I'm not sure how confident he'll be in that third receiver versus Cobb. And Cobb can run any route and go anywhere.
I don't necessarily disagree with that, but their third receiver was 66 targets. That's nothing. So with those other two guys, with Adams now getting a lion's share of what Jordy Nelson.
Right. Do you think he's going to get the 150 or whatever it was that Jordy got?
I think he's probably 135 plus.
Okay.
But you also talked about the Packers playing faster this year.
Sure.
And all the concerns I had about Cobb, where I was saying he wasn't going to live up to his draft potential, they're gone now. I don't feel that way anymore.
I would assume so.
Yeah. Just wanted to clarify that. All right. Jadeveon Clowney on track to play in week one. One of the things that I took away from preseason week two was watching that Broncos game, I was less concerned about the Broncos and more just impressed by the Texans defense without J.J. Watt. I thought they looked great. Do you guys have high expectations for the Texans defense?
Sometimes I feel like teams extend themselves in the preseason and they rise up to the level of competition when they're playing against one of the elite teams in the league and the elite team doesn't do the exact same thing because it's preseason.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, like I think Tampa Bay did that against Cincinnati, for example.
Well, where are the Texans?
It felt like
Cincinnati brought their C game.
Right. That's what it really felt like.
Where are the Texans for you guys?
As far as DST?
Oh, Dave, you have them number one?
Yeah, they're my favorite.
And Jamie has them fifth.
Yep.
All right. Junior Gallette, Washington linebacker, already a bad year for the Redskins.
Yeah.
He's out for the year towards Achilles. Zach Ertz.
Yeah, Redskins DST.
Yeah, don't draft them. Zach Ertz may not play in week one. He had groin.
Start Ryan Tannehill in week one.
Yeah, it's
absolutely.
Not a, that's a good, probably good FanDuel play.
And as far as I can recall, I mean, Breland's not going to play.
Yeah.
He's out.
Right.
D'Angelo Hall's banged up.
Yep.
That's it. Yeah.
It's going to be tough.
Start of the week. Zach Ertz.
Start of the week.
Yeah. Might as well.
Still not.
Let it fly.
Soon I'll be able to finish my Zach Ertz sentence. Still not sure if he'll play in week one. Johnny Manziel shut down for the preseason. He has a sore elbow. And Bruce Arians is optimistic about Michael Floyd playing in week one, recovering from dislocated fingers.
Draft him.
I got a bad feeling about Ertz week one.
I got a bad feeling about Ertz all season.
Why?
Hey, can you talk about that a little bit? Because I still have him ranked in the top 12.
I don't know
and
why.
Neither do I.
I don't know why you would take Zach Ertz over Tyler Eifert at this point. I think you look at what happened to him last year is the same thing is going to happen to him this year. They like, specifically Chip Kelly likes Brent Celek because he's a sixth offensive lineman and he may be able to catch the ball just as well as Zach Ertz does. Now, I don't think that's the case. I think Ertz was drafted and brought into Philadelphia to be a playmaking tight end. And the reason I was optimistic about him prior to this groin injury was because they lost Macklin. They lost McCoy. They have to replace guys that need to catch the ball for them. And this was prior to seeing how good Nelson Agholor actually was going to be. But now their receiving core is taking shape where they have stud Matthews, potential stud Agholor. Celek's still going to be on the field. You know Sproles is going to be a factor in the passing game. Where does Ertz take a step forward is what I don't see. And he needs to take a step forward. Can he be a streaming option for you? Yes. He had 21 fantasy points in his first two games last year, so he got off to a good start. But does Sam Bradford have that good of a track record throwing to his tight ends?
Yes.
Maybe or maybe not.
He does. Well,
is it that good that it's going to make Zach Ertz that much better where there's two tight ends on the field because they don't take Celek off, they put another guy on?
They don't always keep Celek on the field. I don't know what his snap count was
last
year.
Third and long, probably not.
Right.
First and second down, he's always on the field.
Okay. I remember talking about Ertz during the offseason and saying how if he just gets a little bump in playing time, even if it's as little as 20% more, that should lead to bigger numbers for him. I'm not ready to rule that out with Zach Ertz. And on top of that, you mentioned the wide receivers that have stepped up and look great. Matthews, Agholor, you know how I feel about those guys. I love those guys. Zach Ertz is going to have more opportunities because defensive coverage is going to have to focus on those wide receivers, especially Matthews
coming
out of the slot. What
happened last year when you had those two guys, which were probably better? They had Matthews were better.
By the time that Matthews really started to break out, we knew what Ertz was. And I think the coaches did too, and he wasn't in that same type of role.
But what's changed?
That he might be. I think once he's back and he proves he can run, they're going to give him a chance to go out there and make plays.
I don't know how it's different. That's the thing.
I think it's different in that he gets more work and he has more opportunity.
The thing that he did, which was great, was he went out and he worked on his blocking. He went and spent time with Hudson Hauk. I've said this a million times. He's one of the best offensive line coaches in the history of the NFL. Will that help him take Brent Celek off the field? That's the biggest key. And now he's missing time with a new quarterback in a system that needs him on the field to be productive. He's not there. Why draft him? That's what I don't understand. You can pick him up off waivers.
All right. Fantasyfootball at CBSI.com is our email address. Please put football podcast in the subject line. Here we go. This is from Steve, and where is he from?
Des Moines, Iowa.
Steve from Des Moines says, "Dear Fran, Dante, and Teddy." An easy one to start us off here. Vikings quarterbacks. When having a pick after the top four or five running backs are gone, I like going wide receiver, and then picking up a lot of running backs by the next 3 to 4 rounds.
Love it.
Yes. Now, let's read his team. He had the 5th overall pick, and let's see how we feel about this. I don't know if this was a 10-team or 12-team league. I'm guessing
12. He said he did a 12-team mock draft.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. All right, Eli Manning is his quarterback. Mark Ingram, Latavius Murray, and Joseph Randle are his running backs and flex spots.
He won.
Antonio Brown and Randall Cobb are his receivers, and Delanie Walker's his tight end with Chris Ivory, Martavis Bryant, David Cobb, Eddie Royal. Great team. Sam Bradford on the bench. Great team. Now, I included this email. This is exactly how I would like to structure a team. However, with the fifth pick in the draft, I think we're all still going running back at that point because I don't see how he was able to pull off Ingram, Murray, and Randall. That seems a little lucky to me, and I don't think you can expect to get those running backs.
I disagree because Randall's stock is falling.
Just because he didn't start that preseason.
No, because he got the oblique injury because of, you know, look, there's reports all over the place, and McFadden's been taking first team reps. So you're able to get Ingram around three. Murray's still around four guy. And the one thing I would say, though, is he may have done this draft before Jordy Nelson got hurt.
Well, he took Cobb in the second round, so I don't know.
It just, well, you know, coming back to him at five, it just depends on what happened to him. But yeah, this is a great team.
Well, okay, so I just want to look up Latavius Murray's ADP really quickly because that's the seventh pick of round four, and he's not there in our drafts.
Because we go running back crazy.
See, well, he's not there in this draft either. He's going third pick of round four in a 12-team league.
Yeah, but the thing, though, about our average draft position, Adam, which, you know, again, argue it how you want to, when our projections were first released, Murray was like a top 10 guy.
All right. So this is also keeping me up at night. Going receiver, I said this a week ago or so, and Dave, I think you totally agree with me. Jamie, you weren't on the show. Going receiver depends on who you think you can get as your number two running back in the fourth round. And unless I have one of the first like four picks of the fourth round, I don't know how confident I feel that I can get a guy that I really want. I might have to settle for like an Andre Ellington at that point or a TJ Yeldon. And I don't know that maybe Amir Abdullah. And I'm not ready to do that as my number two guy. Like, I don't really think Latavius Murray, he might be the cutoff for me. And we're talking first four picks maybe of round four, at least in our leagues.
And so if that's your reason against it, then I'd strongly recommend doing running back receiver, some combination of that, where you can still start with a stud wide receiver and a stud running back with your first two picks, and then just do it again with your next two picks.
But my point is it's harder to do that with the fifth pick in the draft than it is with the 10th pick. Obviously, the guy you get in the fourth round is going to be a lot better with the 10th pick. Than
well, let's see. Hold on a second. If you've got the fifth pick in the draft, you're getting a stud running back in round one.
No, but he's not playing that out. He's playing out going receiver.
Right. I'm saying receiver, I'm not
confident.
No, you
can't do it from there. Trade back in your draft.
Well, that's, I mean, Steve from Des Moines or Boise or whatever, he pulled it off.
Why's it got to be Boise?
Where did you say it was?
Des Moines.
Oh, Des Moines. He pulled it off. Iowa, Idaho, same state. Wait, he's from Wayward Pines. All right, anyway, Alan Harold. I understand 16-team leagues are very uncommon, but can you talk about them at least once, please?
They're very uncommon in fantasy.
We're not going to have, unfortunately, a mock from a 16-team league, but we are going to have a mock from an 18-team league that we'll show. So maybe that gives you a little bit of an understanding of a deeper league.
But that's going to be late in the game when we do that draft, though.
We've done a 14-team one. Well, we can't get to every format, unfortunately. It's difficult. So you kind of have to just kind of put players in their own respective draft slots. The thing about deeper leagues is, you know, we talked about this with our podcast league and with anything that goes above 12 teams, is it puts, you know, at least from my perspective, you shouldn't take chances early as much as you would in a 10 or 12 team league.
The mistake I made last year in the deep, well, I wouldn't call it a mistake. It was a pick that didn't pan out. But one thing I learned, I was killed by DST last year in my 16-team league. I could not find a good DST, and it hurt me almost every single week. I drafted the Steelers. I thought they'd be good. They were terrible. And that is a position I wouldn't bank
on
streaming.
Can I ask you a question, though? Did the Lions get drafted in that league?
I don't know, but that doesn't mean, I'm not the only one going to the waiver wire. It's just, I'm just saying it's harder to find DSTs in 16-team leagues.
Right. No, I don't disagree with you. I'm just trying to, like, think of a team that probably wasn't drafted that was amazing.
Yeah, the Lions, I'm sure, were one of them. I doubt they were drafted. It happens. It happens with every position. I just think, you know, any position that you plan on streaming, logically, going to be harder in a 16-team league. So don't overlook it, I guess.
And I think the most imperative thing you can do with your running backs is handcuff them when possible, clearly. But you should be able to get McKinnon for Peterson. You should be able to get Starks for Lacy. You know, it's a little bit more challenging because you have to go a little bit earlier to get an Al Davis for Jamal Charles. But it just puts you in a situation where you don't have to stress about having that backfield. It's very easy to get CJ Anderson and Ronnie Hillman on your team.
Do you draft fewer injury risks in deeper formats?
Yeah, that's what I was kind of leaning toward. You know, I made this, you know, comparison with our podcast league that I made sure when it came down to it. And at the time, I still had it ranked. I had it ranked differently where I had Brady over Tannehill, but I didn't want to deal with the headache of Brady in our podcast league, and I didn't want to carry two quarterbacks. So I took Tannehill. Now I moved Tannehill ahead of Brady anyway, so it didn't really matter, but at the time I had it ranked differently.
All right, Jim Sadeline says, is it crazy to take Doug Martin before Carlos Hyde or Joseph Randall in a standard league?
No, I would still take Randall, and I would still take Hyde, but I mean, listen, Doug Martin is another big preseason game. I think you're going to start seeing people take him ahead of Carlos Hyde. And I think you'll see it because Martin's done it before. Martin's had a big season before, and everybody thinks that he's a safer pick than Hyde.
Do they?
I think a lot of people do.
I don't. Not yet.
I didn't say I did.
Yeah.
I said a lot of people did.
I think it's...
like grandparents.
Doug Martin's like Mr. Preseason right now.
Part of fantasy is not just evaluating players, but it's also evaluating when you have to take them. So, yeah, it's a little crazy to draft a guy that's going three or four rounds later ahead of those guys, but
either
I know what he's saying.
Right. Either pass on Hyde and Randall and take Martin, or take two of them.
Right. All right, Pete from?
Jacksonville.
Oh, let's go with you know what? Local. I'm glad you said that, because Pete, Brady Quinn, and Pat Kerwin recorded the... a podcast yesterday, our brand new, soon to be relaunched as soon as I can post it, for them. Ion Football Podcast. I listened to about 15 minutes. It's long. It's an hour and 20. I don't think every episode will be that long, but it's awesome. That is going to be a really fun podcast for you NFL fans. So when you're done listening to this one, listen to that one. And cool little trick. If you want to listen to multiple podcasts every day, you can speed up the sound, at least on iPhones. Listen at like 1.5 time speed, get you through it kind of quicker.
But then don't we sound a little chipmunky?
No, it's not that bad, honestly. I don't like doing it unless I'm trying to cram a lot of podcasts in. But
maybe we should start talking like this.
But it is actually pretty useful. All right, here's the question. I've heard your tight end discussion, and the name I don't hear a bunch is Vernon Davis. After the top seven or so, why not a guy who could still be the number one option in the passing game, or at worst number two behind Bolden? I don't buy Torrey Smith because I don't buy Kaepernick's ability to throw it deep. So why not Vernon Davis?
It's not a bad number two tight end to gamble on. But that means you got to carry two tight ends in a 14 or 15 team roster. I'd rather see it first again from him. Clearly he could bounce back. It's, you know, he could easily be what, remember what happened to Antonio Gates 2 years ago? Where he was terrible for the majority of the season. And then lo and behold, last year he came back and was the number two tight end.
Right.
It could happen. I mean, you know, Davis is old, but he's not that old. Did he really fall off a cliff because he didn't have a lot of playing time? Did he fall off a cliff because he didn't spend any time with the team in the offseason and had no real work? Or was this the whole thing was just a disaster for them? If their defense is going to struggle, which, you know, some people think it does, and they have to throw the ball more, well, you got to assume he's going to get more targets, and that can only be a good thing for him. So I could see it. I'd rather see it first as opposed to drafting.
Tony Sperano, their new tight end coach, got pretty good history with tight ends, doesn't he? Jason Witten, Anthony Fasano, they both have had good seasons.
Yeah.
And
maybe Vernon runs a wildcat.
Somebody's going to surprise us at tight end. Chad from somewhere in Nova Scotia.
Okay, how about Nova Scotia?
And I knew you'd struggle with that one. He says, book it, Adam. Brown is so much better than Floyd, it's not funny. I guarantee 1,350 yards and 7 touchdowns.
Wow.
For John Brown.
I can see the 7 touchdowns.
I could see 7 touchdowns and 1,000 yards.
Yeah.
I don't, and that's a very, very high ceiling as it is. It's probably safer to say something like 806. But he's good. He's a good receiver.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to win a lot of leagues if he gets to those numbers because I have him on a
bunch of rosters. I've got him in a bunch of leagues too. I'm happy. I like him. He's good.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite guys.
I like him. His name's John and his nickname is Smokey, and that's good.
Mike is from a city north of Boston.
Augusta, Maine.
Robin, Maurice, and Barry. I believe those are the Gibbs, the Bee Gees, no?
Sure.
You would know.
Sorry, I know about music. I better be right about this. I'll have to look it up. This might sound crazy, but even as a late first rounder, do you think we might be undervaluing Rob Gronkowski? The reason I say this is because this is the first time since 2011 he's had a healthy offseason. Remember what happened that year? 90 catches, 1,300 yards, 17 touchdowns. Last year he had the ACL, 2013 the arm, 2012 the ankle. So he's healthy and heading into a year where he's only going to really compete with Edelman for targets. I believe Gronkowski might be a top three wide receiver, which blows away every other tight end in the league by leaps and bounds. Am I crazy?
He's talking to you because I don't undervalue Gronk.
Right. I undervalue. Listen, what's his ADP right now?
16.
Right. So I don't undervalue Gronk either based on the average draft position. You just are more willing to take him closer to fifth overall than I am. I like him closer to 12th overall than you do. And he's going to have a season like he did in 2010.
Or last year.
No, if he has a season like last year, if he duplicates last year's stats, he's a very good, he would be considered a top 10 wide receiver or a top 10 running back.
He doesn't play one of those positions.
That's fine, but I think you can still win your league without Rob Gronkowski. It's not like he's the key to winning in fantasy football.
Makes it a lot easier, though.
At the tight end position. It helps, but so is finding that rare tight end off the waiver wire, the Julius Thomas of 2 years ago or the Antonio Gates of last year. And you can find that guy and put him on your roster, and you spent next to nothing to get him on your team.
Sure.
That's another reason why I like Ertz, is because I think he's got potential to be that guy. It's just later on in the draft when it happens.
Let me ask you a question, though.
Go ahead.
Just based on last year. Just last year alone.
Last year alone.
Does Jimmy Graham get better or worse from the stats he put up last year?
I thought he did worse. He was banged up.
This year. Does he do better or worse than what he did last year?
What were his stats last year?
I don't know.
I know he scored 137 fantasy points. I'd like to think that he could do better than that. If he gets 800 yards and 10 touchdowns, that's right on 137. So I'll say he does better, maybe 910.
Okay. Does Antonio Gates do better or worse than he did last year?
I will say worse on Antonio Gates.
Does Olsen? Travis Kelce do better or worse than he did last year?
I think Kelce can do better than last year.
Does Olsen do better or worse?
I think he'll be right around where he was last year, which is 1,006.
Does Martellus Bennett do better or worse than he did last year?
You know, this is all well and good, but I actually think the most important question is, does Rob Gronkowski do better? Because if he has one of those crazy years that we've seen him and Graham have in the past, then he might be worth the number one pick. But if he has the same year he had last year, then he's probably more like, I don't know, number eight or something like that.
Exactly.
So what's going to happen? What do you guys think?
I think he does better. I think once he got healthy from the ACL, which was right around the time that offense started to kick in, you saw what he's capable of.
How about this, Dave? Jimmy Graham was 889 and 10 last year, so 910 would be just about the same thing.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah. So he would be right on that list. And Gronkowski last year, I mean, you can't take away what he did, obviously. He caught over 80 passes. He had, 82 overall? 82 for 11, 24, and 12. Could he improve on those numbers? Maybe. Probably. 1,213? Probably.
Right.
Does that make him in the conversation as a top five pick? I don't see it. I think there are a number of receivers that can do better than that, and running backs that can total 1,200 yards and 13 touchdowns. There's a few of those too.
Those were the Bee Gees, by the way, and, I was going to do my Bee Gees impression, but we're out of time. So
next podcast. We'll make you do it.
I'll speak in a high-pitched voice. I got very mixed reviews on my Drake yesterday. Sign up for Fantasy Football Commissioner. I promise you that's the best way to play fantasy. We have an outstanding product. It is worth every penny. And looking forward to reading an email tomorrow from Danny from Canada about his bad luck last year. It's almost funny to – and this year, actually. Almost funny to point and laugh at Danny from Canada, who shared his email with us. Dave and Jamie, thank you so much. Back tomorrow with another one. I'm Adam Azer for Fantasy Football Today. Adios.
Bye.